And welcome to Garage Talk Live. I'm Vince Bonfigli, and it's Tuesday, June 19th. And we have a debut driver on the show joining us, and we're going to pick him up right now, who spent his weekend in the road course in Indianapolis driving for Burton Racing. I'd like to welcome for his first time, Tommy Dreese. Tommy, welcome to Garage Talk Live.
How's it going, everybody? Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you.
All right.
Oh, not too bad.
Good to be on.
That's cool. Looks like you had a pretty busy weekend down at the Brickyard. Of course, the 2.43-mile road course is a lot different than the 2.5-mile thing, but that's a pretty busy place when you got 60 cars out there.
Pretty busy, and it was pretty hot, too. It was about 95 degrees and humid, and, it was a real hard-fought race.
You managed to take home a third place in the main event, and you also won Trans Am West, taking home the big trophy.
Yeah,
that
was really great. We didn't get through it without troubles. I got hit pretty good, but nothing happened to the car, so I kept going. And then I got tangled up with another driver. We went side by side in the turn one. And I thought I gave him enough room, but it looks like I should have given him a little bit more. I wound up getting a penalty and a drive-through penalty. But for some reason, I didn't go a lap down. And I came back out in, I think, seventh or sixth or something like that. And I had about seven laps to go. And I think that kind of fired me up and a little bit, I would say. And I won't say what I was saying in the car. But I'm glad nobody was following. But no, you know, it was a real close call. The officials have a real tough job of trying to make calls right away. They don't want to change the race after the race is over. So I could tell where it looked like we got into each other, and then it looked like I drove through him. But I did back out and give him some room. Anyway, got to the drive-through penalty, and it just looked like the heat, you know, not only affected the cars and, you know, making the tires hot and the track real hot, but it looked like it affected some of the drivers. So when I came through, I was kind of feeling pumped up again, you know, almost like kind of collecting myself. And we picked off a few drivers, a few cars right at the end at the last couple laps, and wound up winning the West race and finishing third on the podium overall.
Now, how does that all work? Does the West run along with the regular series, or is the West the Saturday and the main event, I guess, Sunday for the
the West, you know, we're trying to promote the West and trying to get people, and maybe next year they're going to include, you know, places like Sonoma, Laguna, and Portland into the main championship. Right now there's five West races. Two of them race combined at the same time at Indy and at COTA, you know, over there in Austin. So there's a race and a race, so you can run. So, but you gotta sign up for it. You gotta be able to run for the overall, and you can run within it with the West Coast people that are coming in. So it was two races in one. I was running for both overall and for the West.
Because I know the NASCAR Daytona Rolex series, where they run two different vehicles at the same time. So I was just wondering, you know, you can run one but not the other, or you can run in the same event, but you have to choose a different car. And here, like, trying to get used to
right.
The same car, I guess, though, it helps.
Yep. Well, we're hoping next year that they're just going to have what they'll do is they'll include a couple of the West Coast races into the whole main event, and possibly just one run championship. Now, they also they also run like a north and a south, and it's more of a, it's not the main championship, but they run a north for all the north races over there, and then the south. And what that does is it lets guys and girls who can't run the full season, maybe they'll pick up five races. So, you know, it kind of helps promote everybody from GT1, from the SCCA national amateur ranks to try to come up into the pro ranks.
That's pretty good. Any way to promote the series? Of course, the Trans Am series has been around for quite some time. I myself have owned a couple of Pontiac Trans Ams back in the day, so that's where they got the name for that car from. So it's good to see, like, the sports cars don't get maybe, like, a lot of the TV that NASCAR and, I guess, NHRA does yet. But with all the new motorsports channels with MAV TV and all that, it kind of helps get you guys out there on the big screens.
Oh, yeah, and that helps sponsorship. Then that helps getting a couple bucks to go racing and then get these cars in front of the fans. The cool thing about the Trans Am cars is they're kind of like the road course specialists, you know, and the cool thing about NASCAR didn't get all into the ABS brakes, into the traction control, you know, automatic transmissions. And Trans Am's the same way. We don't have any driver aid is what it's called. We got a little downforce, but we got 850 horsepower, no traction control, no ABS brakes, and you got to shift the cars. And I think that what that does is it equalizes, a lot of drivers out there and a lot of teams to be able to go compete against the best drivers in the world. I don't care who you are. If you get in a Trans Am car and you do some practicing and you got some talent, you can go fast. And it equalizes for the teams also with the big budgets or the small budgets, because you're able to, a lot of people can build those engines, the specs on the chassis, they only allow so much. So, you know, when you talk to the guys in more of the modern IMSA racing, which is great racing, the budgets are just spiraling out of control. And so it's really hard to maintain and keep teams on. So, I mean, you ask any drivers who've driven all the best cars in the world, once they get in the Trans Am car, a TA car, particularly a TA car, they don't want to, they feel that's probably some of the best driving in the world, best cars to drive.
Pretty good. I mean, you know, when you think of a sports car, road course car like that, do you think of shifting gears and things like that too? I mean, that's half the fun of it. I mean, if you're going to have an automatic transmission and basically just steer the car and have ABS brakes, kind of makes it like driving on the highway. Well, maybe not the LA freeway, being you're from LA, so, but out on some of these open roads like over here on the East Coast.
Yeah, you know, look. I'm not gonna downplay driving anything and racing against anything has its, you know, everybody's got the same thing, but when you take the elements of driving out of the driver's hand and you put it into the electronics, it just causes for parity. The guys who are able to do all the testing are going to be a second faster. You can't have every driver testing these cars and setting up the ABS brakes and the traction control. You just mash the throttle and go. You hit your brakes, you can't lock up the tires, you know. And sure, there is a talent to that, and there is technology, and everybody wants to have technology for their road-going cars. But I think when it comes to racing, they're taking a little too much out of the driver's hands and putting it into the electronics. And that's why Trans Am and NASCAR still, you know, they're, you know, I, you know, there's guys who have driven some of the best current, you know, modern technological cars. They get in the Trans Am car and they say, you know, I wish I could do more of this, because it is the driving back in the driver's hands, and it puts the basics of trying to get a car to handle into the team's hands. So it's a true team sport.
That's for sure. And speaking of NASCAR, a little segue into that, you're heading up to Sonoma this weekend for the Monster Energy NASCAR Cup Series event that's held there once a year. And so you're going to go from something that handles probably a lot better into something that you really got to muscle around the track.
Yep, yep. When you talk about a Trans Am car, that's about 2,750 pounds. 850 horsepower, a little more downforce, big tires. In a NASCAR, I think you're talking over 3,000 pounds, half the size of a tire, and 800, 850 horsepower. And some of the guys have even more. And, yeah, I'm looking forward to it. We're racing racing for Starcom. Great team out there. Alicia and Derek Cope gave me a call. I know they had some road course guys. They got some oval guys going, and they're doing pretty darn good this year for a small team. You know, they're a real small team with a big heart. And so, you know, am I going to get into a car like Jimmy Johnson? No. But we're going to go do the best we can. I think these guys are running, you know, somewhere up in the 30s in the points. And, you know, a lot of people might think, well, you know what, in the 30s, but you got 39, 40, 45 teams out there. And it's the hardest racing. It's the toughest racing. And, you know, you might be racing, you know, you got the top 20 guys racing, the big, big teams, 25 teams. You know, you look at some of the biggest teams and the best drivers in the world. And they're in, you know, they're trying to find their way up into the 20s, up into the 10s. And so we're going to do our best to show well. We've got GoShare on the car and, you know, looking forward to promoting them. And I hope I can do a good job for these guys and run with the guys that we're going to be running with.
Well, I know some of the teams as well go to road course specialists out there. Maybe not so much anymore, but used to be like Burris said, or Ron Fellows would always land a decent ride and wind up driving in there. And, of course, it was always fun trying to watch them compete against the guys that just ran ovals all year long, and it made for interesting racing. So driving for Derek Cope, you know, you can't be too bad. He is a name, won the Daytona 500 as well. So it's not like he's a no-name team. It's just there's some of the smaller ones out there, and you could probably give them some insight and maybe get that car into the 20s.
Yeah, you know, that would be amazing. Yeah, you know, the road course specialist, you know, a lot of the kids now coming into NASCAR for years now already. I mean, you look at Jamie McMurray and you look at all those guys now, you know, and the younger guys coming in, they're all coming from go-karts. They know how to go left and right. But the more important thing is they have thousands of miles in these cars, so they understand the car. And the road course specialists now, you know, anymore, I mean, you got, you know, I was going to mention Uncle, you know, Carl Edwards and those guys. I mean, those guys are amazing on road courses. We miss you, Carl, out there. I wish you'd come back, but I know you were doing that thing for a long time. But you watch him and you watch, you know, so many guys out there can run the road courses now, and they're in good stuff. And sometimes the big road course specialists that come in, they're going to come in for a small team. You know, once in a while they get to get in a good car. I think all these cars, you know, are relatively good. You know, it's all about, it's a business, and some people have big budgets, some people have small budgets. But the one thing about NASCAR is that everybody's got a heart and a passion to race, and so they might be racing for 20th, they might be racing for first, they might be racing for 30th, but there is racing throughout the field, and it's hard, hard racing. Every driver that's in NASCAR has won a championship in something.
Yeah, that's why everybody goes to that, to a point there. They get to compete in a different form of motorsports where it's bare bones. Well, it's not bare bones basic anymore, because if you saw the cars today, they got electronic dashboards, and you can adjust your, what they call, track bar to help your handling a bit, but that's all done with a knob in the car as opposed to a computer in the pit. So There's a little bit of difference. I'm sure you'll be familiarizing yourself with that this weekend during practice and all that. And that team communication, I think that has a lot to do with it as well, don't you?
Yeah, well, I got to get that. You just reminded me about that interior adjustment. I have no idea what that means, so I got to figure that out. Also got to change the way I talk. They've got different ways of, you know, there's a few things in NASCAR that, you know, you have to get the communication down right. That's one thing that a lot of drivers who become very good at, they might start off, you know, you do have an opportunity in Trans Am. You know, it's a sprint race. You got what you got, and that's it. An hour sprint. You can't come in for tires. You don't come in for fuel. You don't come in. You're out there, and you better do it with what you got. The strategy in NASCAR, you know, you can have pit strategy. You've got fuel strategy. So there is a lot of things to think about in NASCAR. Also, you might go out with not so good of a setup, and as a driver, you got to be able to communicate. Because you might come in a couple times in a race like this, 2-3 times, you might get yourself, you might go out with a car that's, comes back about 2 seconds, and you might be able to come back in and gain another second a lap by making some good decisions. And hopefully I will be able to communicate that to the team, what the car is doing, what I need. That's a talent. That's a talent in itself right there. And hope I can figure it out. But that's what you said. You know, Derek is a Daytona 500 winner. He's raced a lot of road courses, so it's great racing for a racer, racing for a driver owner. That's pretty cool.
Yeah, that's you don't get that too much anymore. It's usually a team has 4 cars in the field and they run in the Xfinity series or like the farm systems and grow their drivers through the lower ranks. And when you just have one guy going out to do it on a week in, week out basis, basically just keeping his one car running makes it harder, I think. So the thing about that is there's more work involved and the owner's more hands-on. Now, what you're going to find out too this weekend, stage racing. They have 3 stages. So not only do you have your regular fuel stops, then you got to have a strategy. Normally, I think Sonoma 90 laps, they go 3 pit stops or 2 pit stops and try to stretch the last one to the end, so they spread them out. Now with the stages, it's kind of like intermissions, which, depending on the type of fan you are, they some like it, some don't, but sometimes it takes the long, drawn-out race and tightens the field up a couple of times in race and makes it a little more interesting. So that's something else I guess you're going to have to get a little used to.
Well, I'm glad I called you and on the phone with you, because you're reminding me of all this stuff that I haven't been thinking about. I've just been thinking about trying to get ready. That's right. There's stage racing too. So, yeah, you know what? I'm going to get in the car, push the button and shut up and drive and do what they tell me to do. So, yeah, that's all strategy stuff. That starts getting too complicated for me. So I'll let them tell me, you know, when to go and when to slow down. And I don't think they're going to tell me to slow down much unless it's a yellow or it's time to come in for some fuel. And another thing, there was another competitor out there at Indy, and there's going to be one also at Sonoma, and that's the heat. It looks like, you know, it's been like in the high 70s and low 80s, and now it looks like it's going to want to be 90, 100, 95 for those 3 days. So I think that
that's pretty.
That's hot. That's just, it's
yeah,
already.
Especially out there.
Yeah, when it's 70 degrees outside, those cars are still hot. So this ain't going to help it.
Nah, because you figure what? It's like 130 inside the car. So just make sure you have a good hydration.
I don't know what temperature it is inside there, but you put a chicken in the oven at that temperature long enough, it'll cook.
That's for sure. Because you figure, I've been out to San Francisco a few times, and it's usually 70 degrees all year long. So if it's getting that
hot. Yeah, well, this is more inland, and It's beautiful country. It really is. It's amazing. And yeah, I'm looking at it right now. Oh, look at that. It's going to be 94. It went down from 100 to 98. So that's not so bad.
Oh.
And then for Sunday, yeah. And for Sunday, it looks like it's going to be about 85. So at least that's a drop of 10 degrees. That's not, you know, we'll figure it out.
That's for sure. Well, Tommy, good luck this weekend. Thank you for coming on the show, and we hope to have you back and give us some more road course insight here on Garage Talk Live. So I know you got to go enjoy a day or so off before you have to head on out, or you're out up north.
Yes, sir.
And
yes, I can't thank you enough for taking the time to say hello and hi to all the fans out there, and go share and. We'll talk to everybody soon, and hopefully it's a good show for TV and for the fans at Sonoma.
Well, I'll be watching and rooting for you because you came on the show, so I always root for my
guests.
All right.
I got one more fan. Okay, thank you.
No, you're quite welcome. Glad to have you, and
thank you.
Well, thank Ms. Ashley for hooking it up.
Okay. Thank you, everybody. And go Bird Team Racing, and go for the Trans Am Series, and also for Star and Alicia Cope. Thank you for having me, and I'm going to work my butt off.
I'm sure you will, and I'm telling everybody that listens to me to root for Tommy this weekend at Sonoma.
All right. Thank you, everybody.
Hey, thanks, and bye now. There you have Tommy Drissi making his debut appearance here on Garage Talk Live and then heading up to drive for the Copes in the Monster Energy NASCAR Cup Series event, which they run once a year there. Of course, they run normally two road courses, but NASCAR is going to be running three because the October race at Charlotte will be on the road as well as the ovals. They're calling it the Roval race. I remember when Darrell Walter used to say that about Pocono because they were shifting gears. And now Pocono adopted the name Tricky Triangle, so I guess the moniker Roval is going to go to the new Charlotte course. Anyway, busy weekend in motorsports. Let's check out those results. Ernie Francis took the number one spot in the Berryman Products Trans-American race at Indy Motor Speedway. Amy Ruman was second. Tom, of course, you just heard, was third. Tim Kesman was fourth. Mark Bowden was fifth. David Pintarek, sixth. Simon Gregg was seventh. Eighth was John Balcom. Ninth, Warren Dexter. And rounding out the top ten, another young lady, Cindy Lux. So, again, another sport where the ladies are climbing the ladder and hope to make it from there. So, two ladies in the top ten. And that's good to see. So to check them out this weekend. And speaking of which, of course, all the only Cup Series had off this past weekend. So as they were preparing for the Save Mart 350 at Sonoma, but in action, this weekend is K&N and West, and the Camping World Truck Series are down in Gateway. So Xfinity has the – oh, but they were racing this past weekend. Along with the Truck Series. So let's go to the Truck Series race and wrap that one up. Brett Moffitt taking the checkered flag, adding his name into the playoff round with the win. Noah Gragson was second. Harrison Burton who was your pole sitter, was third. Dave Gilliland, fourth. Johnny Sauter, fifth. Jesse Little was sixth. We'll have to have Jesse on. I have contact with his people there. Cody Coughlin, seventh. Eighth was Christian X. Ninth, Stuart Friesen. Rounding out the top 10 was Myatt Snyder. There were 12 cars on the lead lap. Of course, the 7/8 mile track owned by Rusty Wallace, which was kind of funny. NASCAR was there, and they were interviewing Rusty down in Bristol during the drag racing season, so during the Thunder Valley Nationals. We'll get to that in a little bit. But there were 6 questions for 44 laps, 7 lead changes amongst 7 drivers. The race went the scheduled distance, no overtime. Your stage winners were Stuart Friesen, won stage 2, and stage 1 was John Hunter Nemechek, who had vehicle problems, getting into a wreck. Your big lap leader was Brett Moffitt. He led once for 76 laps, gets 5 playoff points, so he led the last 76 laps. As we look at the points, Johnny Sauter with 4 race wins is in the top spot. Brett Moffitt now has 2 wins this season, so he'll move to the number 2 seed, even though he is 3rd in points overall. Noah Gragson, who's 2nd in points, will bump down to the 3rd spot in the seeding. And then Stuart Friesen, Grant Enfinger, Matt Crafton, Ben Rhodes, and Justin Haley round out the 8 playoff contenders. I mean, this is race number 9. So, the Camping World Truck Series does not run the full 36 schedule. They run a shorter schedule, so their playoff time will be coming up in a few. As a matter of fact, their regular season should end at either Michigan or Bristol in a couple of months. Actually, it'll end in Michigan because Bristol would start their playoffs for the, I think they run 8 races. I'll have to check. So anyway, let's pick up our winner at Iowa, Brett Moffitt.
All right, everyone, we're going to wrap up with our post-race media availabilities as we are now joined by race winner Brett Moffitt and crew chief for the number 6 team, Jeff Newholm's Toyota, Scott Zipadelli. Guys, can you both just take us through those final laps and Fib and just why and how special this win is for you tonight?
Obviously, being my hometown race, I don't know why this was sounding funny. Being my hometown race, it was really important for me to do well here, and it was an uphill battle all night. You know, we didn't qualify where I thought we should have, and me and Scott both were dumbfounded by that and also kind of frustrated with that. So the fight from 16th to 7th, I believe, at the end of the first stage was a huge success, and then we had a lug nut get caught in between the wheel and the hub, and we went all the way back to 14th after that. So it was definitely an uphill battle, but Scott did great strategy, and we were talking about it all race long of what our get-home lap was, and that was 112, so that caution was around 107, I think, when we pitted. And from then, it was we committed to the plan of pit then and save fuel, and we were actually able to get better stage points in stage 2 than I thought we would. So but with the pursuit of Noah Gragson, and that was really tough the last 40 laps for me. It was all about just hitting your marks and hoping that he wouldn't be able to pass us, and thankfully he wasn't. Well, he did, but not for long.
Done.
So, yeah, pretty much what Brett said. The new the new updated splitter configuration that NASCAR has implemented on the truck series has made it very difficult to pass. And you can see the trucks can run side by side for lap after lap, but to finish the pass is very difficult. So watching the last four or five races since that change, it's been all about pitch strategy and getting out front so that you don't have to pass. But in doing that, you still have to have a very good truck to be able to maintain the lead. And we did tonight. And once we got it clean air, it was very good. And it had really good speed, and it didn't fall off much. And I mean, Brett did an amazing job of hitting his marks and controlling the race at that point. And it all worked out perfectly.
Yeah, it was definitely an exciting race for sure. We'll open up the floor to questions now.
So there you have Scott Zipadelli. Yes, he is related to Greg Zipadelli, his brother, who runs Stuart Haas operations for Tony. And Brett Moffitt, of course, taking the win this weekend. In the NHR, and we'll go back to in the main event of the weekend for NASCAR was the 8th annual Iowa 250 presented by Enogen. Pretty much a one-sided affair dominated by a little gator, Justin Allgaier. He won both stages and led seven times for 182 laps, scarfing up all the playoff points. And it was nice to see the Xfinity Series, not run by regulars and no Cup guys were in it because they had the weekend off. Morgan Shepherd, who's, God bless him, still running, still out in the field. And we got to get Morgan back on. He's still doing it. I remember when he started off his 50th year in racing, but he's still out there. He made the race this time. There were five cautions for 31 laps, 13 lead changes amongst five drivers. Like I said, it was pretty much a one-sided affair with Justin Allgaier kicking everybody's butt. Didn't have to worry about Kyle Busch or Brian Blaney or somebody else in there. Christopher Bell was second. Daniel Hemric was third. Cole Custer in fourth. Brandon Jones, fifth spot. Riley Herbst, sixth. Ty Majeski, seventh. Tyler Reddick, eighth. Ninth, Matt Tifton. Rounding out the top ten, Kaz Grawa. They had three rookies in the top ten. The only one not a regular listed as not running for points in the Xfinity Series was Riley Herbst. But you had some of the truck guys carry over and fill a seat. As we look at the points standings, we have no the points leader is Elias Sadler. Justin Allgaier is the only one with multiple wins this year, so he's listed in six. But if he was seeded, he would be at the top spot with Christopher Bell, who has one win, and I mean Tyler Reddick and then Christopher Bell in that order because Tyler Reddick has more points. Now you have to finish above a certain spot to get in there, so Ryan Preece does have a win, but I don't know if he's running for points because he's far back there. He is like 26th in points, so we'll have to see if he gets bumped up. Because I know Jeremy Clements won a race last year, but he usually finishes up higher in the points. Matter of fact, he's 18th right now. Only 12 make the field, so as far as the top 12 go, it's Sadler, Cole Custer, Daniel Hemric, Tyler Reddick, Christopher Bell, fifth. Justin Allgaier, like I said before, was listed sixth. Brandon Jones is seventh. Ryan Truex, eighth. Ninth, Matt Tift. Ryan Reed in 10th. Austin Cindric is 11th. And Ross Chastain is in there. Spencer Gallagher is listed as 13th, and he has a win, so he's high enough in the standings with the win, but he's been suspended, so we'll have to wait and see how that's going to run, huh? But here we have our race winner, Justin Allgaier, with his crew chief. Now, of course, Justin drives for Junior Motorsports, which used to be, well, which is Dale Earnhardt Jr.'s team. Now, Justin in the number 7. Regan Smith was in that car a couple years ago when Danica Patrick came up from the IndyCar series to drive in the Xfinity series, that she drove for Junior in that number 7 car as well. So that car does have some prestige. It's probably the top car in Junior Motorsports. Elliott Sadler driving the number 1, probably being the other one. So here's what Justin had to do, talk about his win this weekend.
Attention in the media center. We'll go ahead and get started with our race winning team. And the crew chief, Jason Burdett, has joined us. Jason, you guys dominated this race. Kind of walk us through the overview of the steps and everything that you guys went through to make this happen.
I think, in all honesty, from the original restart, the original start of the race, we went from 11th, 6th or 7th on the first lap there. That was a big moment just to get toward the front, get some track position. We struggled a little qualifying. And, to make up that much ground in one lap was a positive. And then, the car was good, and he did a phenomenal job the rest of the day. I think, obviously the 20 was really good. And he was able to hold them off for, I don't know, 150 laps. So there, and they raced side by side, clean racing. It was a great day. Everybody on the brand Chevrolet did an awesome job. Everybody back at the shop built a fast car, and we were just able to come here and capitalize on a solid day. We had this day going, I think, last year here, maybe the second race last year. We had led a bunch of laps and ran in the front, maybe won the second stage, and a yellow with 80 to go or 90 to go come out, and we went on the wrong pitch strategy and it ended up hurting us. So, we've had good solid days here in the past. Today it just all came together.
For the first stage that he won, he pulled a pretty dicey move there. What was going through your head whenever he was making it 3 wide and pulled off the green white checkers?
I mean, obviously he knows he's in control of the car at that point. I'm just kind of watching. But, he does a great job. 9 times out of 10, he makes really good decisions. We all make mistakes here and there. But the lap cars were tough today. When everybody's running the top, and including the lap cars, it makes it hard to get by them. I mean, the 22 was trying not to be overly aggressive, and Justin just caught them at the right time and was able to sneak by both of them at once. It was a good move, to get us that stage point.
All right, we'll go ahead and open up the floor. We'll start right back here with Chen.
I guess Justin's out at the Victory Lane celebration to the Thunder Valley Nationals down in Bristol Dragway, which is not too far from here. I am going to get to that race. I've been to Englishtown, and I know what that feels like. And if anybody that hasn't been to an NHRA Mellow Yellow event, get there and hang around the start-finish line, at least if you're going to do it through qualifying, then you get the feel of what these cars are actually like. And I heard in Thunder Valley with mountains on either side of the track, it echoes something fierce. So that's on my bucket list. I already did the night race at Bristol, so now I got to do the Thunder Valley Nationals. Every ticket's a pit pass, so you buy a ticket there, you wander through the pits, the garage area, all the trucks are there, the drivers are there. And I always tell everybody, say hi to Erica Enders for me, because she always comes on the show, so I don't have any issues with that, and I'm sure she knows who you're talking about, especially if you say Vince from Garage Talk Live. But anyway, in the Top Fuel division, Mike Salinas. Now, that's not a name you hear of regularly. And Tony Schumacher were in the finals. Salinas qualifying number 8, which is pretty good because it's not a name you see very often there. The number 1 qualifier was Clay Milliken, so he was looking to repeat at Bristol. But Salinas went up against Leah Pritchett in round 1. And he wound up with a 062 off the light with Talia's 092. She had a quicker ET at a 401 with a 1, but him with the 0.03 of a cent quicker off the tree erased that with his 402 and with the whole shot win. So he got there first, sending the vaunted Papa John's dragster back to the truck. Then up against number 1 Clay Milliken, they got off the light okay. Both pretty much dead even, 078 for Clay and Salinas with an 074. But Milliken had engine issues, and Salinas was able to maintain his 4.0, a slight bit slower, 4.03 this time. It's weird you see the Top Fuel guys in the 4 second, usually around the high three, mid to high threes. But he was able to carry on to the semis against Scott Palmer, again with a 4.04 with a 2. Reaction time was slow for both, 1.12 with Salinas, Scott Palmer with a 1.08. 0.04 quicker, but Palmer's 4.35 was way slower than Salinas. Now, on the other side of the ladder, Tony Schumacher, the number 2 qualifier, had a dead even launch with number 15, Terry McMillan, in round 1. Schumacher's 079, McMillan 080 off the light, but Schumacher's 391 was way quicker than McMillan's 511. Of course, a lot of tire smoking and traction issues early on. Then up against Pat Dakin in round 2. Dakin off the line quicker, but Schumacher was just able to get ahead of him at the finish line with his 4.02, and then Dakin had a 4.04. So it sounds close, but when you're talking launching that quick, I mean, Schumacher 090, Dakin 88, that's pretty even off the line. And then up against points leader Steve Torrence, again, Schumacher with an 4.03, Torrence with a 4.10, Schumacher off the line, quicker 064, Torrence with an 083. Not even close on that one. Schumacher goes up against Salinas in the finals. Salinas 093 off the light, Schumacher with an 065, and then Schumacher breaking under 4 seconds again in the final with a 394, was able to best Mike Salinas, who had issues getting down the track, wound up crossing the line with a 525. So Schumacher taking home the Wally. Antron Brown, believe it or not, had the low ET with a 389 in round 1, and he was the 3rd qualifier. Doug Kalita with the best reaction time, 030. Didn't even figure into the finals. So top speed at 316 with Antron Brown. In the funny car division, could Courtney Force do it again? She again was the number 1 qualifier. All her wins have come from the number 1 spot up against Johnny Lindbergh in round 1. or 075 off the tree was way quicker than Lindbergh's 121. Of course, Courtney 416 with a 9, Lindbergh with a 438 with a 2. Round 2 up against Tommy Johnson Jr. These two face each other a lot. And it was Courtney Force with her 419 with a 7, and Tommy Johnson with a 513. A little bit of tire smoke getting there, and 0.01 slower to the thousandth, but she was an 066, he was an 076. And then up into the semis against Bob Taska Jr., or the third, actually. Bob Taska, who has been on the show before a few times, but we can get him back on. He's back racing full time. One of two Ford Mustangs. Bob qualified number 4, and the other Mustang wasn't even in the field, so. But Taska was the one that made it to the final round, and he went up against Ron Capps, who had a couple tough customers himself to get through to get to the finals. John Force qualified number 6, but again, tire issues in round 1 for a lot of people. Force off the light at 07, Ronnie Capps at 049, Capps with a 424, and John Force with a 582. Round 2, Capps went up against Robert Height, again, defending champ, 073 for Height. Ron Capps with an 057, came down to a 423 for Height, 420 for Capps, which if I think Capps could have got off the tree a little quicker, he might have pulled off the whole shot. And then up against J.R. Todd, who was running real well as well. Todd off the tree in the semis with an 034, 4.37, Caps 049 with a 424, Caps taking the semis up into the finals. Now, I was tracking Courtney Force. She made it to the semifinals. Let's track her competitor, number 4 qualifier, Bob Taska. Oh, the other Ford did make the field. Tim Wilkerson and the other Ford Mustang qualified 13, so he had a couple of Fords in round 1. Then Taska takes round 1, 102 with a 413, the Wilkerson's 070 with a 418. And that was, I think if Wilkerson would have been a couple of 100ths of a second quicker, he might have taken the whole shot. That was five 100ths can be made, might be a little much to made up. Round 2, Taska 423 with an 068 to Cruz Pedregon, who's 050, wound up blowing a cylinder a third of the way up the track, and he wound up with a 575. Of course, the semis against Courtney Force. Courtney off the light a little quicker with an 066, not much for 1,000th difference. Taska with an 070, but where it counted was Taska across the finish line with a 421, Courtney with a 427, so 0.06 of a second slower. And it's not like she had issues. He just wound up getting there quicker, sending him to the finals. Courtney with the semifinal round, due to the rest of the competition, still maintains her points lead. We'll get to that in a little bit. Then in the finals, it was Bob Taska with an 056, Ron Capps with an 061, but Capps with a 423, Taska with a 4.3 even, wasn't enough to overcome the deficit, so Capps takes the Wally. Low ET of the event was Bob Taska with a 413. Jeff Deal with the best reaction with an 019. Courtney Force with the top speed, 307.65 miles per hour. in the Pro Stock division. The finals came down to a couple of multiple-time champions, Greg Anderson in the Summit car and Jeg Coughlin in the Yellow Jegs Elite Motorsports car. Jeg qualifying second, Greg Anderson qualifying first. So you had the 1-2 guys, both sides of the ladder, coming at each other. Anderson taking Wally Stroup, the number 16, in round one by 0.03 of a second and quicker off the tree, 0.36 for Anderson, 0.65 for Stroup, 7.02 for Stroup, 6.71, not even close. Then up against Vincent Nobile, who won the last event, and this was a bit closer. Nobile a little quicker off the tree, 0.32 to Anderson's 0.46, but Anderson with a 6.72 and Nobile with a 6.75. Had the advantage there with the, believe it or not, wasn't a whole shot because his time was quicker, even though he was a little slower off the tree. Anderson up against the Tanner Gray. Anderson, the best launch of the day, with a 007 off the tree with a 6.76, with an 8. Tanner Gray with an 0.30 with a 6.76 with a 4. There was the whole shot win for Anderson, sending him into the finals. Jeg Coughlin, on the other hand, went up against Tommy Lee, the number 15 in round one, who actually did not run. There's no time there. Coughlin with a 6.71, was looking for an ET for lane choice. Then up against Chris McGahey in round two, 6.74. McGahey having issues. The motor let go early, wound up coasting across at a 16.73. Then up against Drew Skillman. Coughlin with an 0.25 and a 6.75 ET. Didn't have to really worry about it because Drew Skillman wound up fouling out, tripping the red light with a minus 0.25. He left that much early. So he just coasted it to a 15.11 because he was out of it from the get-go. In the final round, Greg Anderson, 0.23 with a 6.74 with a 1. Not a bad, but Jeg Coughlin put it all together when he needed to. 0.18 off the light, a 6.70 with a 9 to take home the Wally. So that's 3 for Elite Motorsports this year. Coughlin, Anderson, Coughlin, Nobile, and Eric Enders all have won this year. Low ET of the day went to Coughlin in that final round against Anderson, but the best reaction time of the night was the round before with 007 Greg Anderson against Tanner Gray, and the top speed was Chris McGahey. As we look at the standings now, Steve Torrence has a 110-point lead over Clay Milliken. Tony Schumacher, with the win, is only 136 back, 26 points behind second. That's like two rounds of racing. Doug Kalita in fourth, third. Leah Pritchett, fifth. Antron Brown, sixth. Terry McMullen, seventh. Brittany Force, eighth. Ninth, Scott Palmer. And Mike Salinas cracks the top 10 in that making it to that final round. In funny car, Courtney Force still has a big 201-point lead because Jack Beckman, Robert Height, J.R. Todd all left early, and Height third, Todd fourth, even though Todd did get to the round two. Ronnie Capps in fifth, Matt Hagen in sixth, Tommy Johnson Jr. in seventh. Matt Hagen went out early. He was in the booth for a couple of rounds. Cruz Pedregon, 8th, 9th, John Force, and into the top 10 was Bob Tasca Jr. So good to see a Ford up in there. Back when John Force drove the Fords, he used to have Tasker's name on the front end of his car. So they work together as far as technology and things go, because with Tasker is the only still running for Quick Lane, was sponsored by Ford. He got them to come back in. In the Pro Stock division, Greg Anderson in the top spot. 55-point lead over Tanner Gray. Vincent Nobile is third, 65 back. Eric Enders, 85 back and fourth. Drew Skillman, 144 back and fifth. Jed Coughlin with the win is in the sixth spot. Chris McGahey, seventh. Bo Butner, eighth. Derek Kramer, ninth. And Jason Lyon, who you usually see up near the top of the points, is 10th. But he's got a substantial lead over Alex Laughlin, who had issues Sunday, and he's 343 back of the leader, but 91 points back of Jason Lyon. I don't see Laughlin catching him before Indianapolis. Well, let's check out the schedule. Again, Save Mart, 350. This Sunday, look for Tommy Drissi driving for Derek Cope's car. And out at Gateway Motorsports Park, the Eaton 200 NASCAR Camping World Truck Series. The NHRA. Will be in action this weekend as well. I believe, let me go back and look. That's July. Yes, they will be at the Summit Racing Equipment NHRA Nationals in Norwalk, Ohio. Not a weekend off for them. After this weekend, they'll have the weekend off, and then they'll go up to Epping, New Hampshire. Well, that's about our show for tonight. Hope everybody enjoyed it. Special thanks to Burton Racing's Tommy Drissi, taking home third in the Trans Am Series in Indianapolis, and the Trans Am West Series taking home the Winner's Trophy. That's a lot to keep up with. I don't know how they do it, but that's all well and good. So I hope you enjoyed it. This week in Sonoma, let's see, who am I going to go with? All right. I confused it. My computer bringing it up. Well, let's see. It could be anybody this time of year. Kevin Harvick took the win last year. Clint Bowyer second. Brad Keselowski and Denny Hamlin, who led the most laps. It was pretty much even. A lot of Fords in the top 10. Kurt Busch, Ryan Blaney. And then, of course, you had Harvick, Bowyer, and Keselowski. Harvick leading the most laps. Well, you know, the kind of year Harvick's been having, he is a California guy. I'm going to go with Kevin Harvick. Well, that's our show for today. I'm Vince Bonfigli. We'll see you all next week. Good day and good racing. Bye now.